Hi, this is Austin Hill. Hey, thanks for checking out this podcast from Austin Hill in the Morning. Now, you can hear our program live weekday morning, 6 till 8 Central Time. There are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows. They're available online. Our web address, of course, myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Start your day connecting faith to life. It's Austin Hill in the Morning.
And welcome to October. Yes, here it is, October 1. We have arrived. Welcome to our program as well. This is the Faith Radio Network. It's now 6:04 Central Time, and I'm Austin Hill. Honored to be with you weekday morning, 6 till 8. As you get your day started, and as we seek to connect faith to life, it is indeed October. And by the way, October is officially Pastor Appreciation Month. Just so you know, and we're going to do it upright. How would, if you're a pastor, think about this now. How would you like to receive a week-long getaway to Sunscape Retreats? A nice escape, a getaway at a beautiful resort retreat center. Well, tell you what, for those of us who are among the population that I'll call the laity, those who are served by pastors, I hope we'll get over to myfaithradio.com and register to enter a drawing for our pastor to win a nice retreat. I'll tell you more about that later this morning, but it's official, and we've kind of ramped up to this over the last couple of weeks or so, but it's now here, being October has launched as of today. So get to myfaithradio.com. All the details are there. Coming up in this episode of our program, as a matter of fact, in just a few moments, we're going to tackle an issue that, if it's not on the radar screen at churches and with nonprofit ministries around the country, I certainly think it should be, and that's the topic is simply this: cybersecurity in an era of big data breaches. We're talking big corporate data breaches, all just, again, over the last 60, 90 days or so. We've seen some large corporate retailers, probably the largest among them, the Target store chain, which, of course, that impacts a lot of people in the Twin Cities area in the state of Minnesota, with their corporate headquarters being in the area and whatnot. But it also impacted a whole lot of customers, obviously, and employees. Likewise with the Home Depot retail chain. And more recently, we've seen some very scary and very disturbing things come to light with Jimmy John's restaurants. Now, Jimmy John's, the data breach there, that gets into some tricky terrain, in as much as many Jimmy John's restaurants, and matter of fact, I think it's accurate that most of them are locally owned. They are what we call a franchise business operation. So you've got the large corporate umbrella that owns the Jimmy John's name, and they sort of say, well, here's what a restaurant should look like, and here's all the product offerings. You know, you go from one Jimmy John's location to another, they're always quite consistent in terms of what they're offering. But the ownership and the investment of the capital to make those enterprises work generally come from local entrepreneurs. So that's kind of how a franchise business operates. Jimmy John's, just in the last 2 weeks or so, stepped up to the podium rather sheepishly and said, if you swiped a credit card at one of our stores in the last three or four months or so, your credit card information may have been stolen. So we've got these multiple data breaches. And I will tell you that, when data breaches happen with people's credit cards specifically, in large corporations, there is a ripple effect that goes all across the economy. And I'll explain this in a few moments here. But that ripple effect is indeed felt at the level of leadership within churches and nonprofit Christian ministry organizations. So talk with our tech expert, Scott Barstow, about this coming up in just moments. Also later this hour, our great friend Lisa Anderson with the Boundless Singles Ed Ministry Outreach at Focus on the Family. Lisa Anderson with Boundless. She is actually going to be hosting a syndicated talk show. She actually already hosts it, but it will begin airing this coming weekend here on the Faith Radio Network. So Lisa Anderson coming up just about half an hour from now to talk to us about singles in America and her new program targeting singles here on the Faith Radio Network. All this and more just ahead. Hey, don't forget our good friend Bill English from BibleAndBusiness.com. He joins us on Wednesdays. He'll be with us into the 7 o'clock hour. So stand by for more. It is indeed October 1. And I'm Austin Hill. Glad you're with us. This is the Faith Radio Network. It's now 6:08.
News you can use. Connecting faith to life. It's Austin Hill in the morning.
So why necessarily does a business or a ministry venture, for that matter, need a mission statement? And why do our lives need a mission statement? Or do they? Bill English with BibleandBusiness.com will address those questions coming up into the 7 o'clock hour. Looking forward to that. So stand by. That'll be about an hour from now here on the Faith Radio Network. It's 6:10. Indeed, there is a ripple effect in the economy when big corporations suffer data breaches involving people's credit card data. It's something that we need to be looking at and taking very, very seriously. Scott Barstow is a tech investor who you can find at scottbarstow.com. He's also an investor with Bandwidth Labs. That's a what we call a business incubator firm in the state of North Carolina. He joins us now on the guest line to talk about this data breach phenomena. Scott Barstow, welcome back to our program.
Thank you very much, Austin. It's great to be with you again.
Always great to be with you. Where do you begin in terms of grappling with this propensity? I mean, we've got somewhat of a trend now with data breaches among consumers of large corporate businesses. Where do you start on that one?
It's a really complex problem, and I don't think, we've found our way here today through a series of just sort of, I guess, kicking the can down the road on making tough decisions about how to store credit card data securely or just how to store personal data securely. I think what we've done over the last, really 10 or 15 years is that not a whole lot has changed about how we access, or how we shop online or how we get access to private information or proprietary information about our company. It's generally still controlled username and password, and we're still sort of operating in the mid to late 90s context, which is strange when you think about how much everything else has moved ahead.
That's a very interesting observation, and even just merely at the consumer level, those of us who are adults using computers back in the 90s, we'd probably have to say, yeah, I had a username and a password in 1995, just like I do today. Scott, I've also heard you say that in many ways, with response to this, same old technology for 15 years or more, you've said, we're playing catch-up right now. We have the bad guys, so to speak, who have gone well beyond the username and password. They've cracked that code, so to speak. How do we catch up with where they're at? What are we supposed to make of that, the fact that the whole economy in many ways is sort of playing catch up?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things that I think are important here. One is that I think there is technology available, and we're already seeing companies start to implement it where you don't have to store your credit card with every place where you shop. And I think that's a material step forward. But I think what we're trying to figure out now is, everybody's used to kind of the password that you know. So everybody uses passwords that they can remember, and they use those passwords in multiple spots. And so you have computers, which are much better at sort of breaking down what a password might be. They can crank through, millions and millions of passwords, in a very short amount of time, just trying to guess what somebody's passwords might be. And so I think you have this really weird situation where you have humans trying to remember what their password is, and so they choose something that's very simple or easy to remember, and that makes you all the more vulnerable with all of that proprietary information. I would advise all of your listeners, for their personal accounts and for their business accounts, I would advise them doing a Google search for credit and fraud monitoring and signing up with one of the services. I personally use a service called Identity Guard, and that will monitor all of my bank accounts, all of my credit accounts. It monitors my Social Security number, all of these other things, and I get alerts if something happens that they think is sort of out of the ordinary. And you'll pay anywhere from $25 to $50 a month or something like that for the service. But the amount of, and I've had instances where someone's tried to open an account or there's been fraudulent activity on one of my accounts, and I've immediately been able to shut that down, you know, close my account, get a new card, all of those kinds of things with almost no damage to my, you know, to my credit or anything like that.
Very interesting. I've also heard you say, Scott Barstow, don't use real answers for security questions. When you have to register an account for something and it says, well, give us your mother's maiden name, you're saying, hey, those kinds of accurate, true, real, personal things, people can find out that stuff very easily and hack our accounts. But tell us the shift that we need to make there.
Sure thing. I think I fell into this trap very early on, but in the last probably 5 or 6 years, I've made a conscious effort to change my behavior in this regard. And I think this is a really concrete way that all of your listeners can start making a change. And that is when they ask you all those questions, what was your first car? Where'd you go to high school? You know, all of those things, they don't know what the right answer to those questions are. So what a real concrete thing you can do is just make up answers that you use everywhere, and or you can rotate answers. You can get as complex as you want, but put those answers somewhere else where you can find them, and then just use purely fictitious answers for all of those questions that no one would ever be able to find online. So that's something very concrete that you can do.
Yeah. You've also said use two-factor authentication whenever it is offered. Tell us about two-factor authentication.
Sure thing. So two-factor authentication is something that really started probably 2 or 3 years ago. And the way it works is if you log into a service that offers two-factor authentication or you need to reset your password, what they'll do is you have to provide your password, and then they will ask you, where can I send a text message with a special code? And you've then got to receive that text message and then enter that code into the system in order to gain access. And what that does is that means that someone who's trying to hack your account has to have not only your password or you know, crack your password, but they also have to have access to your phone and or some other device that only you own and only you have access to. And so I think that's a step in the right direction. That has its flaws as well, but that's anywhere and Gmail is a big one. That's an absolute must for Gmail, because if you lose your email or somebody hacks your mail account, that's extremely serious.
Yep.
So it's available in Gmail, Twitter, Facebook, all of the big services that you use every day. Will certainly offer two-factor authentication. I advise turning it on all the sites where you can.
Appreciate that. Scott Barstow, thanks very much for being with us again this morning. Scott Barstow, find him at scottbarstow.com, a graduate of Oral Roberts University and a tech entrepreneur. Some great advice on securing our data as individuals, as households, as families, as consumers, but also some good wisdom for those of us operating churches and ministries as well. It's 6:18. It's Faith Radio Network. That's what you're listening to. I'm Austin Hill. Glad you're with us. Welcome to Wednesday and welcome to October. Good morning. It's now 6:20 on the Faith Radio Network. Thank you for being here, and thank you for your support. We welcome you to come on board anytime and join us. We've got a visitor welcome packet, as it were. If you're new to Faith Radio, all you need to do is visit myfaithradio.com, click About, and then Welcome Packet, and we'll get that out to you today. We'd love to have you join us and partner with us. We are fully listener-supported, and we can't do it without you here at Faith Radio. MyFaithRadio.com, the place to get to. Coming up in just about 15 minutes from now, a look at an exciting new radio talk show program that's actually been going for quite some time, but it will be newly broadcast on the Faith Radio Network beginning this weekend, hosted by one Lisa Anderson. She heads up the Boundless Outreach Ministry. It's an outreach to single adults across the United States, vis-a-vis focused on the family. I'll be talking with Lisa Anderson from Boundless coming up at about 6:35 this morning, so stand by for that. Also, a look ahead. We have news out as of, midday yesterday. There's now a diagnosed case of Ebola, the Ebola virus, right here domestically here in the United States of America. It's actually the individual was identified in the state of Texas. And I'll give you the details on this later this morning. We really need to, I believe, this is one of those matters where we need to be people of discernment and not just buy into the hype and anxiety, I guess, and the speculation that's being ginned up in the dominant news media across our country. But we need to be people of discernment and thoughtful about this. I will get to that later this morning. And likewise, I really do believe we need to, as the Christian community, when I say we, I mean the evangelical Christian community across our country, of which I'm a part and probably you are as well. I think we need to be people of discernment when it comes to the problem that is engulfing the world, and that is radical Islam-driven terrorism. We talked a little bit about this yesterday here on our program, the fact that last Friday, just less than a week ago, we had a beheading, a gruesome murder via beheading in, of all places, the Bible Belt of the United States of America, a suburb of Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. And it's very interesting what is and what is not being said about this. The suspect, the murder suspect, who has now been charged, took a few days. The individual who is suspected of having committed that beheading, who people observed committing the beheading, he has now been criminally charged. Thank you for being with us. This is the Faith Radio Network. It's now 6:25, and still to come, Lisa Anderson from the Boundless Singles Adult Outreach Ministry of Focus on Family, in part to talk to us about the syndicated program from Boundless, the syndicated talk show that will begin airing this weekend here on the Faith Radio Network. We're very excited about that. Connecting Faith, that's our program that airs weekdays 12 noon Central Time here on the Faith Radio Network. On yesterday's edition of the program, host Neil Stavem welcomed Tom Eli of Oasis World Ministries. Tom is an evangelist, and his goal is to help people share their faith in an effective way. Here's part of that conversation from yesterday.
I remember I was talking on the phone with one gal, and I was having computer problems. While we were waiting for something to download on the computer, this thought came in my head, share your one-minute witness. And I thought, well, where did that thought come from? And I realized, obviously, the Holy Spirit must have put it there. So I thought, well, I'll just obey this. And so I said, and she was a very bubbly, talkative, happy kind of person. And in fact, she was in the Philippine Islands in a call center there. And they actually teach them Western accents so we can understand them better. And so while we're talking, I said, hey, do you mind if I just ask you an unrelated question while we're waiting for this to download? She was very happy to hear and said, yes, please. So I said, I did the one-minute witness. I said, what's the best thing that's ever happened to you? Oh, my family, my children. She went on and on about her family. Well, then I said, well, could I share the best thing in my life? She said, sure, please do. And so I shared, and as I was sharing, she became very quiet. And I'm wondering what's going on. And we ended our business, and that was the end. And 2 days later, I received an email from her. I did not give her my email address, but she had to look it up in the company records. Dear Mr. Eli, it's highly prohibited for us to contact our customers. But I had to tell you that when you were talking about how Christ changed your life, my eyes were showering with tears, and I could not even speak or my voice would crack, because when I was 17 years old, I was serving Jesus. But just yesterday, one day ago, I told God, you might be for some people, but you are no longer for me. And now one day later, out of all the thousands of phone calls we received, God directed your call to me. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Well, it's hard to think of a more meaningful conversation than that, where I can actually speak into someone's life. And I was just doing it because I was looking for opportunities, but I had no idea where that person was at. And when we share our faith, we don't know if someone is next to suicide or they're just mildly depressed or if they're just successful but still searching for significance. But you do know one thing, everyone needs the Lord. Everyone needs to be loved and accepted and needed. And so as I start on the cusp of a meaningful conversation with people, many times they'll take the hook, so to speak, and they'll start talking, start opening up, even to perfect strangers. I'm very surprised how many perfect strangers just start opening up their whole story when I ask them, what's the best thing that's ever happened to you? So it works.
That's Tom Eli of Oasis World Ministries being interviewed, actually, by Neil Stavem on Connecting Faith, our talk show that airs weekdays 12 noon Central Time here on the Faith Radio Network. Now, coming up on today's episode of Connecting Faith, host Bill Arnold welcomes Bible scholar Ron Rhodes to talk about his forthcoming book, The Big Book of Bible Answers. We're looking forward to that. Connecting Faith, weekdays 12 noon Central Time here on the Faith Radio Network. It's now 6:29. Welcome to Wednesday morning and welcome to October 1st. Still to come, a hard and honest look at the terrorism, the radical Islam-driven terrorism that we see engulfing the world and now having even entered into the United States of America. Ebola virus. Yes, it is here in the domestic United States. We'll talk about that. And good news for single adults in America. Lisa Anderson with the Boundless Single Adults Outreach Organization. She joins us in moments to talk about their new syndicated radio talk program. All this and more just ahead. I'm Austin Hill. It's now 6:30. SRN News up next here on the Faith Radio Network. Good morning. This is the Faith Radio Network, and thank you for being here. We are honored to have you with us. We love and appreciate your support. We are fully listener-supported here at Faith Radio. Get on over to myfaithradio.com and find out how you can partner with us to help make this happen. I'm Austin Hill. I'm here weekday morning 6 till 8 as we connect faith to life. While you're getting your day started, still to come in updates on, Ebola. The Ebola virus is here domestically in the United States. And radical Islamic-driven terrorism marches on, continuing to engulf the world. What's the appropriate Christian response? We'll talk about all that and more just ahead. Single adults in America. Do you realize that we just wrapped up recently that National Singles Week across the United States of America? That is not a specifically Christian sort of endeavor. But nonetheless, Christian singles groups around the country participate in it, which I think is just a fine thing to do. Lisa Anderson is with Boundless. That's an outreach, nonprofit outreach ministry to single adults across America. It's affiliated with Focus on the Family in Colorado Springs. Lisa Anderson also hosts a syndicated radio talk show on behalf of Boundless, and that program will begin being broadcast coming up this weekend here on the Faith Radio Network. We talk to her now on our guest line. Lisa Anderson, welcome back to our program. Tell us about National Singles Week as you've been observing it and others involved with Boundless have been participating.
Yeah, well, I guess it is our week since Boundless is a single young adult ministry at Focus. I'm assuming your gift for me is in the mail, Austin, to celebrate,
priority mail at that, actually. In fact, I've got the tracking info and all of that, so I can send it to you. Honest, I can send you the tracking info if you'd like.
I just figure for all the, weddings I've gone to and all the anniversaries I helped celebrate, now it was kind of my turn, so.
I would think so, yes.
Yeah. exactly. So, no, yeah, it's a good time. And it's not something that we at Boundless came up with or even in the Christian community came up with. So, but it's something that we figure, hey, we appreciate this and single adults are part of the community. In fact, now, we just have seen reports come out that fully half of the U.S. population is now single. So,
mm-hmm.
I guess we're at least almost a majority here.
Certainly on the way to becoming a slim majority at the very least. Lisa Anderson, the fact is that in American culture today, adults are forestalling marriage, or in some cases getting up on the idea of traditional marriage altogether, but certainly forestalling marriage until they reach older and older ages, well into their 30s and 40s and 50s in some cases. Tell us what that means for our culture and why Boundless exists.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, and I would say, you know, that's definitely not one reason for us to be jumping on the bandwagon with National Singles Week. So we're kind of a little bit talking out of both sides of our mouth at Boundless because we want to encourage and support the singles in our midst, but at the same time, we're huge fans of marriage and family. And so what we've seen is in the last generation, two generations really, a move towards protracting one's singleness and delaying marriage. And a lot of that, Austin, is just out of fear of getting to marriage because of the examples that we've seen. But also kind of this desire and this, jumping on the bandwagon of what we've seen come everywhere from Hollywood to the feminist movement and beyond, that it is my time now, really my time forever. I'm going to do what I want to do when I want to do it. And we're saying, you know, really the biblical model for most people is to eventually move towards marriage, probably sooner rather than later. And so how do we encourage single adults, you know, while they are single to maximize that season, but yet prepare for the one to come? Because if marriage is in your future, truly the time to start thinking about it is now, not when you finally meet someone that maybe you're interested in marrying and then you think, oh, how do I have to patch my life together to make this happen?
Mm-hmm. Lisa Anderson with Boundless.org. She is on the guest line here on the Faith Radio Network. Boundless is an outreach to single adults across the United States of America. So how does one prepare when they're living singly? How does one prepare for a future where your time is not altogether your own, your resources certainly are not either, and you do have to keep a schedule and commitments and obligations to young children, perhaps, and to a spouse and extended family and such? How do you go about that?
Yeah. Well, I think, first of all, being a single adult still means that you're an adult. And so this idea, you know, that I think has been perpetuated that we can live kind of in this Peter Pan lifestyle is pretty bogus. So, you know, we have to all move towards maturity, whatever our marital status is, and that's biblical as well. So I always encourage singles, continue to grow. I mean, if you are not in the Word of God, if you are not plugged into a local church and accountable to it, if you're not in relationships that are causing you to, you know, look at your own life as a mirror and say, where are those areas of sin that I need to be aware of, that I need to be working on? You know, it's not, I keep telling singles, singleness is not a waiting room for marriage. You're not just sitting there waiting to grow up or waiting to become something or waiting to actually start living. You need to be living now. The second thing that singles need to do, certainly in preparation for marriage, is to actually get in real relationships. So, you know, the last thing you want to do is pitch your life to someone, commit covenant to them, and then realize that, wow, that's like the real the only real relationship you've ever had with someone. So get solid friendships right now, ones that you are accountable to, ones where you are dealing with conflict, where you are walking through issues of communication, of sacrifice. Even get into good, solid relationships with married couples and families, especially these younger single adults. I say, you know, you say you want to be married and have a family, and yet you're not even hanging around any families. Do you even know what a real marriage looks like, what a real family life looks like? So invite those people into your life. Get out of yourself. You know, there are many ways for us to start serving even now as singles, and we do have, to some extent, different ways of spending our time and our resources, and we have things available to us that married couples do not. So now is the time to to do a lot of mentoring, to do a lot of serving, to do a lot of missions trips, to do a lot of things that you just cannot do, and they will certainly grow you up. And then finally, singleness is no call to be selfish, and it is no time to sit back and not prepare for marriage. So admit that you want to be married. Don't be afraid to say that. If you see marriage in your future, look for ways to meet great people that might be future matches. Learn about marriage as much as you can, and prepare.
Prepare. Well, Lisa Anderson, thanks very much for joining us. Lisa Anderson heads up the Boundless organization, Boundless Ministries, an outreach to single adults across the United States of America. It's a subdivision, if you will, of the Focus on the Family nonprofit organization. Now, the Boundless radio talk show, Boundless the talk show, that sounds cool, doesn't it? Boundless the talk show actually begins airing this Saturday, October 4th, on most of the affiliates of the Faith Radio Network. Now, to find out if your station and your local broadcast station in your local area is carrying the program, get to our network website, that's myfaithradio.com, and to find the program schedule for your area, that's myfaithradio.com. Get all the info there, and we're very excited to have Lisa Anderson and her associates at Boundless, part of our programming lineup here on the Faith Radio Network. Again, that starts this Saturday, October 4th. It's now 6:42. Welcome to Wednesday morning. It's the Faith Radio Network. And we're glad you're with us. I'm Austin Hill here weekday morning 6 till 8. Speaking of marriage and family, that was my best effort here at a segue, but I think this does make sense. We've got some news out within the Christian community. It's of particular interest in the Christian community, I believe. And it illuminates the importance of, I think, having a modicum of business acumen, but also the importance of having our affairs in order before we die. It has to do with the very sad loss of Pastor Chuck Smith. Chuck Smith, the man who started the Calvary Chapel church denomination. I know folks involved with the Calvary Chapel churches, they will say, we're not a denomination, but they've kind of become that. And I don't mean denomination in any negative sort of way, but I'm sure you're familiar with Calvary Chapel churches. They are literally located all over the world. But it all started with an outreach led by a pastor named Chuck Smith back in the late 1960s, early 1970s, in a suburb of the Los Angeles area, a kind of sleepy bedroom community called Costa Mesa, California. That's where the original Calvary Chapel Church was launched, so to speak. I know it well. I grew up nearby there in Southern California. This was going on even before I was born, actually, but I sort of was growing up as it was growing up. Calvary Chapel has gone on to become a multi-million dollar nonprofit enterprise. By the way, Pastor Greg Laurie, who is doing the Harvest America Crusade this weekend, he comes out of that church movement as well. And this organization owns publishing entities, they own broadcast entities, they own radio stations, in much the same way that University of Northwestern St. Paul owns this, the Faith Radio Network. And Pastor Chuck Smith, after many years of struggling with illness, passed away earlier this year. The news is simply this. One of his daughters, Jeanette Manderson, has filed a lawsuit against her father's California church and its successor. She has sued Calvary Chapel. Now, the lawsuit is making all kinds of allegations. All the details I won't go into necessarily. But basically, the daughter is suing and saying, I want control. Our family should have control over our father's sermons. Now, let's put our business thinking hat on for just a moment here. Chuck Smith, as prolific as his writings and his sermons, the recording, the audio recordings and the videos, both of his sermons, as prolific as he has been over the past 40 years or so, you can imagine that there could be some ways in which people would still pay money to download the audio, purchase transcripts of them, purchase books that he has written. In business terms, we would say that Chuck Smith left behind a fair amount of intellectual property, and the recordings, the video and audio recordings of what he did, that was his work. In legal terms, and I'm not an attorney, but in legal terms we refer to that as created works. So he leaves behind this huge library of created works, this bevy of intellectual property, And I'm not casting any stones at the Smith family, not at all. But apparently there is a legal dispute among the surviving family, the children in particular, about who should own the rights to all those created works and all that intellectual property. The Calvary Chapel Church is saying, hey, he did this under the auspice of the church. We have the rights to this. And speaking in strictly business terms, and there's nothing at all wrong with this, please don't anybody take this as a criticism, but Calvary Chapel could still generate revenue selling that intellectual property, selling copies of it anyway. The family, at least one of the children, is saying, wait a minute, that should be financially beneficial to our family. By the way, one of Chuck Smith's sons is saying, my sister's wrong on this one, the church should get this revenue. My point is that there would appear to be a lack of clarity left behind in the aftermath of Chuck Smith's death. And that's why I say it's probably imperative for all of us, especially those of us who are married and have children, to spell it out in no uncertain terms with a will, get to a good end-of-life counselor, somebody, an attorney, and maybe others who can assist in putting those plans together. And expect disputes even when they just seem impossible or unthinkable. Because you may very well, I may very well, leave behind created works and intellectual property that could become a point of contention for people long after we're gone. Sorry to see the Smith family and the Calvary Chapel folks go through this, but we'll see how this plays out. But there's a lesson to be learned in the midst of it. That's the good news. It's now 6:47. This is the Faith Radio Network. Thank you for being here. I'm Austin Hill. It's Wednesday. It's October 1st. Welcome to it. It's 6:50. Good morning and welcome. Faith Radio is what you're listening to. I'm Austin Hill, weekday morning, 6 till 8. Who needs a mission statement? Do you need a mission statement for your life? Or if you're involved in a particular ministry, or you run a nonprofit organization, or you run a business, you need a mission statement? Bill English, theologian and entrepreneur from BibleandBusiness.com, he takes on the issue of mission statements. Coming up in just about 20 minutes from now here on the Faith Radio Network, is the Christian community in the United States, and is the United States of America broadly, are we responding adequately and appropriately, would you say, to the radically Islam-driven terrorism and beheadings that are engulfing the world? I want you to listen to just a couple of sound bites here. We're going to talk a fair amount about this and take some phone calls coming up into the 7 o'clock hour about this. I have some grave concerns with how this problem is and is not being addressed. But one Pastor Greg Laurie, who is speaking at the upcoming Harvest America evangelistic effort this weekend, Greg Laurie, if you've ever seen any of the videos, sometimes audio of this pops up in his broadcast, A New Beginning, that you hear here on the Faith Radio Network. But in one of the churches that he speaks at, the church that he pastors in California has a couple of different campuses, and one of them, in one of them, he does a weekday Bible study fellowship thing, wherein he kind of operates as a talk show host. He'll sit behind a desk and kibitz back and forth with guests and such. A couple, 3 weeks ago, this was before, by the way, there was a gentleman, I won't call him a gentleman, a man who identified himself as a Muslim and beheaded his coworker in Oklahoma. This is before the beheading in our country. But this was about 2.5-3 weeks ago, Greg Laurie speaking to an apologist about Islam and radical Islam. Here's part one of how this kind of ended up going. Listen carefully to Greg Laurie's words and those of his guest.
We're at war. The United States of America has declared war on ISIS.
Yes.
And then a new group just popped up that you and I were talking about the other day we'd never even heard of before.
Yes.
And I think sometimes, you know, we think, oh, here's ISIS, okay, right. Well, here's this new group. But actually, there's so many groups. What we're dealing with in a broad spectrum is Islamic terrorism.
Exactly.
And I think it's a mistake, don't you, when someone stands up and says, you know, these people are not Muslims. Well, aren't they?
Yes, they are. In fact, the first thing that came out of our president's mouth is they've hijacked John Kerry's. It's this peaceful religion that's been hijacked.
Even President George W. Bush.
Exactly.
Said Islam was a peaceful religion.
And that was the first line out of President Obama's this last week. This is not Islam, what's happening. Actually, it is Islam. It's Islam from the very get-go, how it started, how it continued. And that's why this IS group, Islamic State, believes they are the original Islam. They are doing what Muhammad did and his immediate followers.
All right. Now, that's Pastor Greg Laurie, again, in sort of a talk show format, expressing his opinions, but also interviewing a guest in his church that's in one of the campuses of the Harvest Christian Fellowship in Southern California. By the way, the guest is a gentleman named Don Stewart, who is a Bible scholar and speaks frequently on issues of apologetics and prophecy. Is the Christian community responding to this radical Islam-driven terrorism and murderous behavior adequately and appropriately, and is our country responding to it adequately? A difficult conversation, a difficult topic. We will have that discussion coming up into the 7 o'clock hour, so stand by. It's now 6:53. I'm Austin Hill. This is Faith Radio. On the Faith Radio Network, Live the Promise is hosted by Susie Larson and airs weekday afternoons 3 till 5 here on the Faith Radio Network. Yesterday on our program, she spoke with author Lee Wolf Bloom as Lee shared her story about battling anorexia. Here's part of that discussion.
I feel like, and you're the professional, so tell me if this is true, but I feel like if you let yourself go there too often, there comes a slippery slope where you can't reel it back. Do you know what I'm saying? Because sometimes I think people indulge in the weight loss thing and the body image thing as if they can always reel it back, and it's just sort of one of my hobbies to pay. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But I'd love for you just to speak to the oversaturation in our body, our weight, and where we really make a career out of our food, the number on the scale, how we look in our genes.
Oh, I could unpack so much of that. One thing that I think is really important for people to understand is that an eating disorder is biological, psychological, and social. So you have to have all three things to make the perfect storm. So not everyone who diets is going to develop an eating disorder, but most eating disorders start with the diet.
Interesting.
So for my situation, you take me and you take my sister, and we grew up in the same family. We are obviously got different messages. But for me and my genetic makeup, I had the genetic makeup for somebody who couldn't stop once I started. So another way to say it is genetics makes the gun, an environment loads the gun. Mm-hmm. So our environment, it's almost acceptable to body shame, to say, you know, oh, I'm so fat, or my butt's so big, and that, or, you know, I'm on a diet. So you combine our environment. And then you add in an overwhelming set of emotional circumstances. So, and that's what pulls the trigger. So for me, I had the genetic predisposition potentially for addictive behavior. I had an environment in college where all we were really talking about was dieting and getting thin. And then an overwhelming set of emotional circumstances, really just trying to be a 20-something and trying to figure out who I was and feeling a deep sense of shame that I wasn't good enough, really created the perfect storm once I started dieting. Mm-hmm. Now, somebody like my sister who would do that, it wouldn't turn into an eating disorder for her because she doesn't have potentially the genetic makeup that I do. So that's how it turns from disordered eating into an eating disorder.
Interesting.
But most of our society has disordered eating.
Yeah, okay.
Which is using food, not what food is for, using it for emotions. And food is just fuel. Mm. That's all it is. And you watch, you know, especially in women, you watch commercials where somebody will be on and, oh, I you know, I'm breaking up with my boyfriend, I need to eat a pint of ice cream. It's almost socially acceptable for us to say those things.
To medicate.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And food is just fuel. And unfortunately, in our society, we're a disordered eating society.
Boy, you can say that again. Author Lee Wolf Bloom on yesterday's episode of Live the Promise with Susie Larson. Coming up on today's program, it's Grace and Truth again with veteran journalist Craig Von Busek. Craig and Susie will take a look at some of the more controversial issues in the news. That's Live the Promise with Susie Larson, weekdays 3 till 5 p.m. on the Faith Radio Network. It's 6:50. I'm Austin Hill, SRN News.
Start your day connecting faith to life. It's Austin Hill in the Morning.
Well, good morning and welcome to Faith Radio. It's 7:04. I'm Austin Hill. I'm here weekday mornings 6 till 8. Connecting faith to life is what we do. Even as you get your day started, we try to be informative and challenging, hopeful and helpful. By the way, today begins a brand new month. Welcome to October. And here at Faith Radio, we have declared this Pastor Appreciation Month. I'll tell you more about this later in the hour. But I do hope, if you care, how's this for trumping it up? Oh, my goodness, this is just, the way I'm wording this question is just loaded with shame, right? I don't mean it to be, but if you care and love and respect and appreciate the contributions of the pastor of your church, then I do hope you'll get over to myfaithradio.com and consider nominating your pastor for a nice prize that we're going to give away. It's a great week-long getaway to Sunscape Retreats. Sunscape Retreats, just a beautiful facility, and what a great experience this would be. But this is how we are celebrating Pastor Appreciation Month during October. So please, I do hope that you'll... I'm not suggesting that if you don't log on to myfaithradio.com, somehow you're uncaring and you're insensitive. You might be, but I hope not. Anyway, just get over to myfaithradio.com, get all the info, and do a good turn for the pastor of your church. How often do they go unappreciated and practically giving blood at times in service to their parishioners and to the church, broadly speaking? Let's recognize the service of pastors in a meaningful way. So more details on that coming up later this hour here on the Faith Radio Network. Also, do you need a mission statement for your church, for your nonprofit organization, for your business, or for your life? What's up with mission statements? Do we sometimes place a little too much emphasis on those, or are we not paying enough attention to them at all? Joining us in moments here, Bill English, theologian and Bible scholar and entrepreneur all in one. He is the publisher of BibleAndBusiness.com. Bill English joins us to talk about the need, the necessity of mission statements. We'll get to that coming up next. It's now 7:06. Glad you're with us. This is the Faith Radio Network. Welcome to Wednesday. We continue in moments.
Questions or comments for the show? You can leave them on our show page at myfaithradio.com.
Good morning. It's now 7:08, and this is the Faith Radio Network. By the way, later this hour, an update on, yes, the Ebola virus. It is now identified, has been identified as being here in the United States of America. What does that mean for us now that there is a diagnosed case of this very deadly illness in the state of Texas? We'll get to that coming up later this hour. So how are you doing on crafting a mission statement for your business, for your church, for your life, for your family? How important are mission statements per se? Joining us to tackle this one, our great friend Bill English. He's the publisher of BibleAndBusiness.com. Great Bible scholar and entrepreneur all in one. Bill, welcome back to the program. Good to talk to you. How are you this morning?
You know, I'm doing pretty well, Austin. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very good. You obviously have a phone in one hand. I hope coffee is in the other, my friend.
Actually, a steering wheel is in the other, but I've stopped here at the rest stop to, to do this interview.
Good. Yes, we wouldn't want any trouble. How important are mission statements? How do you begin addressing that topic, Bill?
You know, I view mission statements as one of a trio of statements that every business or ministry needs: a purpose statement, a vision statement, and a mission statement. And they're really in that order. The purpose statement is the global statement of here's why we exist. The vision statement is here's what we hope to do long term, and it's usually measurable. And then the mission statement is usually derived from the first part of the vision statement. You know, in other words, for us to reach our goals in 10 years, here's what we need to do this year or in the next 2 years, and that becomes our mission. Those are the hills that we've got to go conquer, so to speak. I think they're terribly important. They're important, Austin, because they provide guardrails, so to speak, that define the road that the mission, the ministry, or the business is going down. They automatically give you reasons to say no to certain things and to say yes to other things. So, for example, at MindSharp, our vision statement is to help our customers realize that they can do more than they ever thought possible through the people and the software that they already have, through training, right? And so that necessarily says that we're not a software development company. We're not a consulting company. We don't manufacture furniture. We don't do a lot of things. We do training. And that really helps, those statements really help clarify what the ministry or the business is all about.
Yeah, very interesting. Bill English with BibleandBusiness.com. He's on our guest line this time here on the Faith Radio Network. Bill customarily joins us here on our program Wednesday morning, and today we're talking about vision statements, or mission statements as it were. Bill is breaking down what he calls a trio of different kinds of statements, a purpose statement, vision statement, and mission statement. Which of those should we get to work on first, would you say? How do you prioritize those?
Well, if you don't have any of the three, then you start with your purpose statement. You know, why do we exist?
Mm-hmm.
Why does a church exist? Why does a ministry exist? Why does Faith Radio exist? Why does MindSharp exist? Why does the big world of small business exist? You know, those, being able to answer that in one sentence will help provide a ton of clarity to your organization. And so I start with the purpose, and then out of that, how do we fulfill that purpose? That's the vision statement.
Mm-hmm.
And that becomes measurable. The purpose statement is not measurable. It tends to be nebulous. And then the mission statement just fulfills the first part of the vision statement.
Okay. And the mission statement follows as number three then?
It is. It's number, now, in some organizations, it's number one, and they call the vision statement what I call the mission statement. I'm not so much concerned about the words, Austin, as much as I am about the concepts, and that you have them in the order that they are, that I'm describing here.
Sure. Sure. No, that makes sense. Bill English, one thing that I'm intrigued by, and you're not the first person to say this, but you say it very well, and you make the case very well, and I'm glad you're saying it. I'm intrigued by the fact that you're saying that purpose statement, vision statement, mission statement, whatever terminology we use here, as we define ourselves and our mission and our ministry and our business, by definition, we are saying, here are some of the things that we do not do. And I'm guessing that for some people, that's a really, really difficult thing to sit down and write out a document that says, here are the things that I don't do. A lot of us are so eager that we just want to say, well, we'll do it all. And picking and choosing what I don't do, and therefore relinquishing or letting pass by certain kinds of opportunities. That's sort of implied there, and I know that's been difficult for me at times. I'm guessing you've encountered that with other business people who have a difficulty saying no to things.
Yeah, well, I've encountered it in myself. I mean, I'm so interested in so many things, as are you. I mean, I think you and I are a lot alike in that way. Here's the thing. For the Christian business owner, I honestly believe that they're in business because God has called them to be in business. Just like God calls somebody to the pulpit or somebody to the mission field, He calls a number of us to be in business, in the marketplace, in the greatest mission field in America today, the business marketplace. I rely on a phrase to help me understand what my call isn't. And that is, the need is not the call. Just because there's a need out there, just because there's a market out there, just because there's an opportunity to make money doesn't mean I'm supposed to be doing it. And so as God calls me to business and calls me to, and you, frankly, to do, various things, we can automatically say no to other things that are outside of that call.
Mm-hmm. Are you doing some discipleship here on the air, sort of confronting me and trying to get me more focused here on live real-time radio? Is that what's going on here, Bill?
You know what? I challenge both you and I.
And I love you for that. I just have to give you a bad time. Bill English, publisher of BibleandBusiness.com. We will have his remarks on our website, myfaithradio.com. Purpose statement, vision statement, mission statements. Don't leave home without them. Let's all get focused on what we're here to do and what we're not here to do. Bill, as always, it's great. Go grab a coffee. We'll look forward to talking again very, very soon.
I look forward to it. Thanks, Austin.
All right, brother. Good to talk to you. Bill English, BibleAndBusiness.com is his place in cyberspace. See, he's defined his website very effectively. Isn't that good? BibleAndBusiness.com. 7:16 is the time. It's October. It's Wednesday. I'm Austin Hill, and you're listening to the Faith Radio Network. Good morning. It's now 7:18, and this is the Faith Radio Network. It's October 1st. It is also Pastor Appreciation Month. We're celebrating all month long. I hope you'll get over to myfaithradio.com. Log on and get info on how you can nominate the pastor of your church to win a nice week-long getaway at Sunscape Retreats. We are doing it upright, at least doing our part to celebrate and bring honor to pastors during Pastor Appreciation Month. MyFaithRadio.com, the place to get to. Go on, just take the few moments that it will be required of you to nominate your pastor, and we'll have more details on that coming up later here on the Faith Radio Network. It's time to get focused and not give in to fear. We have some interesting news out. Broke midday yesterday. We now have, according to the U.S. Center for Disease Control, an identified, bona fide, diagnosed case of the Ebola virus, a case of the Ebola virus infection in the Dallas-Fort Worth area in the state of Texas. Patient at Dallas Hospital has tested positive for Ebola. This is the first case of the disease to be diagnosed domestically here in the United States. Now, I would, just my opinion here, take it for what it's worth. I think we, as thoughtful people, need to be careful that we are not swayed by those who might try to agendize this latest bit of news. There will probably be some people who will try to make politics of this and say, well, see, President Barack Obama isn't doing his job. We now have Ebola here in the United States. He said it wouldn't happen. I don't know that he ever said that it wouldn't happen here in the U.S. I do believe President Obama said that it was unlikely, and the risks to Americans are very low with the Ebola virus. It was true when he said that back, 4 or 5 weeks ago. It's still true. We need to understand that the Ebola virus is not spread vis-a-vis the air. It's not an airborne virus, and we have far superior public health standards. And think of it this way, as compared to parts of the third world and the blighted regions of the continent of Africa, we have houses with carpet and flooring. Many of the people where the Ebola virus is spreading out of control, there are not houses, not as we know them today, and they don't have carpet and flooring. We have purified, mostly safe and sanitized, running hot and cold water. Other parts of the world don't have that. Other parts of the world where the Ebola virus is spreading. I mean, we have basic infrastructure that you and I just take it for granted. But these things have come about over the decades, over the last couple of centuries or so here in the U.S. We're far better equipped to protect people from this than are people in other parts of the world. So that's one thing to take into consideration, and there will be people who try to make politics of this. I also am a little bit concerned that there will be those who try to lay blame for the Ebola virus entering into the United States. I've already heard some of this, not in any high-profile public sort of fashion in the media, but just kind of out and about where I live and in some of the circles that I move in, I've heard people shake a finger and wag a fist, shall we say, or maybe it's wag a finger and shake a fist. But I've heard people point fingers anyway and blame Dr. Kent Brantley, the Christian American missionary physician from the Indianapolis area, who pulled up his family and moved to the very blighted country of Liberia back a little less than 2 years ago to serve as a missionary physician. We have several American Christians, lots of them, serving abroad in very depleted parts of the world, and they are putting themselves at grave risk for being infected with the Ebola virus. Dr. Kent Brantley actually did get infected with it, and by some miraculous measure, my goodness, he's well on his way to recovery. But I've heard some people say, that guy's endangering the whole country. What a fool he is for going to do that. Well, I think as Christians we need to recognize that there is a biblical concept of being a fool for Christ, taking enormous risks, not without understanding what those risks are. I'm not suggesting that we are called to do things blindly. Yes, there were risks with the Brantley family moving to Liberia, and look at the good fruit that that work has borne. But I am a little concerned. I think we should have it on our radar screen that should there be another diagnosed case of Ebola here in the United States, there may be some who seek to sort of engender a backlash against Christian missionaries who are serving in parts of the world where Ebola is running rampant. So just beware of that. And be prayerful of those who serve in missionary capacities and American servicemen and women serving with the military, as President Obama has now dispatched the military to go serve the Ebola-blighted parts of the world. All that and more is still to come. More details on that. Also, we have a, I guess to use a metaphor, an elephant in the living room. And that is, I'll call this elephant in the living room, and it's in our living room here in the United States of America, metaphorically speaking, even if you're several states away or several miles away geographically. But it is terrorism and murderous, heinous behavior, i.e. beheadings, driven by radical Islam. You can call this whatever you want. You can call this Islamism or radicalism or what have you. But beheadings are inundating the news headlines now on a daily basis, quite literally. And they're happening at the hands of people who identify themselves as Muslims. I want to play the soundbite again. Aaron, we'll just do number one here. This is from a weekday evening Bible study service at one of the church campuses where Pastor Greg Laurie serves. Now, on the weekday Bible study service at one of the campuses where he speaks, he kind of does sort of a talk show format. He'll typically sits behind a desk with a microphone, and oftentimes there are guests with him. In this case, he's speaking with a Bible scholar, a theologian, and a prophecy expert, a gentleman named Don Stewart. And they're kind of bantering back and forth, talk show style. But notice the rather strong statements that Pastor Greg Laurie makes about radical Islam, or Islam as the case may be, and what it means for us here in the United States and throughout the Western world. Roll it, please.
We're at war. The United States of America has declared war on ISIS.
Yes.
And then a new group just popped up that you and I were talking about the other day we'd never even heard of before.
Yes.
And I think sometimes, you know, we think, oh, here's ISIS, okay,
right.
Well, here's this new group. But actually, there's so many groups. What we're dealing with in a broad spectrum is Islamic terrorism.
Exactly.
And I think it's a mistake, don't you, when someone stands up and says, you know, these people are not Muslims. Yeah. Well, aren't they?
Yes, they are. In fact, the first thing that came out of our president's mouth is they've hijacked John Kerry's. It's this peaceful religion that's been hijacked.
Even President George W. Bush.
Exactly.
Said Islam was
and that was the first line out of President Obama's this last week. This is not Islam, what's happening. Actually, it is Islam. It's Islam from the very get-go, how it started, how it continued. And that's why this IS group, Islamic State, believes they are the original Islam. They are doing what Muhammad did and his immediate followers.
All right. Now, that's in the context of one of the churches where Pastor Greg Laurie serves. At the very least, we need to admit that there is a repeated pattern of this very dangerous, very brutal behavior committed at the hands of people who call themselves Muslims. They're not Muslims because I say they are. They're not Muslims because you say they are. Repeatedly, we have people claiming to be Muslims and committing these acts of unthinkable horror. And so I will pose the question into the next half hour. Is the Christian community responding to this adequately? And is the United States of America responding to this adequately? And I will welcome your responses to that. Our number is 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. Talk more in just a moment. 727, this is the Faith Radio Network. Breakpoints is on the way next.
back to Austin Hill in the morning. Join the conversation by calling 877-933-2484.
736, and indeed that is our number if you care to join our program, 877-933-2484, 877-933-FAITH is what that spells out. It's Faith Radio Network that you're listening to. My question, it's kind of twofold, and I'd like to get your response to this. As terrorism, and specifically beheadings, driven by Islamic radicalism, call it what you will, Islamicism, Islamism, radicalism, you know what I'm getting at, I'm sure, is are the beheadings driven by radical Islam, are they being confronted appropriately and adequately by the United States of America, we as a nation, and are they being confronted and dealt with adequately by the Christian community in America? I'd like to get your response to both of those questions. 877-933-2484 is our number. I want you to listen to, this was back about three and a half weeks ago, before there was a beheading committed at the hands of a guy who posted all over his Facebook page about the arrival of Sharia law and his allegiance to Islam. This was before the beheading in Oklahoma last week. Back about 3.5 weeks ago, Pastor Greg Laurie, at one of the church campuses where he serves a ministry called Harvest Christian Fellowship in Southern California. It's a couple of different campuses there. And at one of them, during the weekdays, I think it's Wednesday or Thursday evening, they have a Bible study fellowship function, which is not uncommon at all. But Pastor Greg frequently will do kind of almost a sort of a talk show presentation. If you can picture this, this is drawn from a video. He's sitting up on a podium behind a desk with a microphone, and he's interviewing a gentleman named Don Stewart. And they're going back and forth, having a very conversational chit-chat, but talking about some very serious issues. Don Stewart, expert in the studies of other religions and biblical prophecy. Here's part one of that conversation. Roll it, please.
We're at war. The United States of America has declared war on ISIS.
Yes.
And then a new group just popped up that you and I were talking about the other day. We'd never even heard of before.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes, you know, we think, oh, here's ISIS. Okay.
Right.
Well, here's this new group. But actually, there's so many groups. What we're dealing with in a broad spectrum is Islamic terrorism.
Exactly.
And I think it's a mistake, don't you, when someone stands up and says, you know, these people are not Muslims. Yeah. Well, aren't they?
Yes, they are. In fact, the first thing that came out of our president's mouth is they've hijacked John Kerry's. It's this peaceful religion that's been hijacked.
Even President George W. Bush said Islam was a peaceful religion.
And that was the first line out of President Obama's this last week. This is not Islam, what's happening. Actually, it is Islam. It's Islam from the very get-go, how it started, how it continued. And that's why this IS group, Islamic State, believes they are the original Islam. They are doing what Muhammad did and his immediate followers.
Okay, now there are people who vehemently disagree with those statements here. But I will tell you this, whether you believe that this this murderous, heinous behavior is driven by the Islamic religion as such, there's no doubt that we have a repeated pattern of this behavior happening at the hands of people who call themselves Muslims. A person is not a Muslim because I say they are. And frankly, nobody is a Muslim because you say they are. I respect human beings made in the image of God as they are. I respect them enough to take seriously their own declarations about themselves. And we had we had 13 U.S. Army soldiers murdered at a U.S. Army compound, a U.S. Army base in Texas back in 2009. Murdered at the hands of a U.S. Army soldier, a guy named Major I'll leave his name out of it. He was an Army major, and after taking up two firearms at a graduation ceremony and killing as many people as he possibly could, he took down 13 U.S. Army soldiers, wounded another 20. Afterwards, he said he was following through on his commitments to his Islamic faith. That was November of 2009. We had the underwear bomber case in December of 2009, Christmas Day. A young man was permitted to board a flight in Paris, France, even though his father called U.S. government authorities and said, don't let my son come into your country. He wants to kill people. he was permitted to fly into the country. And as the plane was landing over the skies of Detroit, Michigan on Christmas Day 2009, he tried to detonate a bomb in his undergarments. We call him the underwear bomber. But he was, and thank the Lord, the device did not detonate to its fullest extent. But he self-identified as a Muslim. There's a plot that the New York Police Department foiled, a plot to blow up Times Square in Manhattan back in the spring of 2010. That was a U.S. citizen who did that, and he identified himself as a Muslim. The Boston Marathon bombings back in 2013, that happened at the hand of two young men who are here in the country from Eastern Europe. They called themselves Muslims. And now this beheading in Oklahoma, and the guy who is being charged with that crime identifies himself as a Muslim. Is the Christian community responding to this adequately, and is our nation responding to this adequately? I've got lots more to say about it. Let's get to the phones. It's 877-933-2484. Amy is up next in Minneapolis. Thanks for holding. Amy, you're on the Faith Radio Network. Good morning.
Good morning, Austin. This is really a complicated topic.
Very.
Yeah, that's an understatement, isn't it? But I think we have to try to separate some of the strands of this knotty problem, as it were. One main strand to me, in my mind, is that we need to treat any and all people with the mind of Christ and the heart of Jesus. We need to treat them in a way that we would want to be treated, but yet be vigilant. Just like if I'm going shopping and I see someone hanging around my car, I might not just go to my car. I might do something else just in case that person was up to no good, shall we say. So we have to separate that individual response with what our government does. And I think our government is doing what they can. At least I hope they are. I think the president at least is starting to get on the right track with doing something instead of just twiddling his thumbs. So, like I said, this is really complicated, but I really think that it's kind of a two-pronged thing, our individual response and our government response.
I think that's right. I would even add to that a third prong, and that is not just what we do as individuals and individual citizens of this country, and not just what the government agents, the agents of our government do, but I also think there is something to consider about what the collective action, the collective motion is of the Christian community or the body of Christ within the United States of America. And I'm not supposing you disagree with that. I don't think what we're saying here is in conflict. But we have to ferret this out, separate these strands out, as you say, Amy, and I appreciate your call very much. But this is complex. But I will tell you, sort of implicit in what Amy is saying, and I'll make it very explicit here, doing nothing, ignoring this, not having these difficult conversations, pretending that the problem doesn't exist, I don't think that's an option. And I fear that some people would prefer to try to exercise that as an option. 877-933-2484 is the number. 877-933-2484. More of your calls on the way. Is the Christian community responding appropriately and adequately to the murderous mayhem that we see around our world and now in some parts of the country in our midst? And is the United States of America as a nation responding appropriately and adequately? How would you answer that question? We'll get back to more calls in moments. This is the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. It's now 7:45.
We want to know what you think. Join the conversation at 877-933-2484. It's Austin Hill in the morning.
It's now 7:47, and thank you for being here. The Faith Radio Network is celebrating Pastor Appreciation Month. We'll tell you all about that coming up before the hour's over with. Make sure to get over to myfaithradio.com for all the info. And I'll tell you how to nominate your pastor for a very nice gift coming up later. Is the United States of America responding appropriately and adequately to the threats, the heinous behavior that is engulfing the world and now has happened here in the continental United States of America. This heinous, murderous behavior committed at the hands of people who claim to be Muslims. Are we responding as a nation adequately and appropriately, and is the Christian community responding adequately and appropriately? 877-933-2484 is the number. I've got more to say, and I will in just a moment. Bob is up next in Minneapolis, listening to Faith 900 KTIS. Bob, welcome to the program. Good morning.
Good morning, Austin. I don't think we're responding adequately because we don't have a sufficient understanding that the Quran has contradictory passages as to whether it promotes peace or whether it promotes jihadi warfare. It does have both, and if you were going to invent a religion, you would want to include both verses, well, both kinds of verses, promoting peace and promoting war. So you would have the ones that promote peace, you would have that as cover. You could point to those verses and say, well, look, we don't promote violence, we promote peace. And the Quran has both of those kind of verses in it, and it really confuses people, but it is contradictory.
It is confusing. I would tell you that, and I think this is a fair statement, there are those who could, in fact, there are those who make this case frequently. I'm thinking of a particular professor at Harvard University who likes to say this, but I won't mention the professor's name. But there are those who would say, Bob, hey, I can pick up the Bible and pull things completely out of context and make the case to say that the Bible sanctions child sacrifice, that the Bible sanctions any of a number of sexually immoral kinds of behaviors or things that we would understand as sexually immoral. So could it be that some people are taking portions of the Quran out of context, and therein lies the confusion? What would you say about that?
Well, I would say that in no cases in the New Testament, which is for the church today, are there any verses that promote violence. In fact, they promote turning the other cheek. And the verses that told Israel to go off to warfare with a sword are all in the Old Testament. They were for the nation of Israel only, and they were for back then at that time. The Quran makes no such distinction between now and then, you know, back then.
Okay.
So some people are going to interpret it as promoting violence today.
All right, Bob, I appreciate the call. Thanks very much. Christians do nonetheless recognize all the scripture as authoritative. Different portions of it apply in different sorts of fashions. There is a legitimate exercise, a legitimate discipline called biblical interpretation and application. And I mean, we're talking about exegesis and hermeneutics in theological terms. And people invest their entire lives studying how to do that and how to appropriately understand the scriptures for today. So Bob's point is certainly well taken. Nonetheless, here's what I get a little uncomfortable with myself. And I hear so often within the context of the Christian community that with respect to the radical Islam that is undergirding these very heinous beheadings. And by the way, just a little footnote here. As Christians, I don't believe we should become numb to the fact or allow ourselves to become numb to the fact that beheadings are becoming commonplace. That should outrage us. That should stir our souls. It happened in Oklahoma, well, out on the outskirts of Oklahoma City just last Friday. Today there's a news story. It's been repeated over and over again in our SRN network newscast at the top and bottom of the hour. 9 beheadings all at once in one of the nations of the Middle East. Yeah, we cannot become numb to the fact that this is becoming commonplace. But that said, what I hear over and over again, one thing I do hear frequently in the Christian community is, well, we can't succumb to fear. Okay, fair enough. I'm not exactly sure what succumbing to fear means when anybody happens to say it. I don't think we want to be controlled by our fears. Fear, nonetheless, is a God-given emotion that, when properly understood, can be a warning sign to us that, hey, there's a problem here. And so I see this rush to for people to swoop in and say, well, don't blame the Muslims because this isn't really what Islam is about. Okay, I'm picking and choosing my words very, very carefully here. I'm saying we have a pattern of people who identify themselves as Muslims committing these very heinous acts. And think of this analogically. Think of this analogy, if you will. Imagine in your community, or perhaps even in your own church, a wife is assaulted by her husband. Okay, now we have laws that govern that. We call that domestic violence, obviously. It's illegal. But imagine a wife being beaten by her husband. And the first response is for pastors and other community leaders to rush in and say, hey, listen, he's not really her husband. Oh, sure, he claims to be her husband, but husbands don't really act this way. Husbands are peace-loving people who treat their wives appropriately. No real husband would ever do this. Now, would that be an appropriate response, an adequate response, to a man who beat his wife? I would say not. But in many ways, it seems to me that's how the Christian community, anyway, is responding to these repeated acts of heinous beheadings. And I'm often reminded, you know, there's this gentleman, he's a frequent guest here on this program. As a matter of fact, we've got him coming up later this week. And I just think so highly of this gentleman. His name is Paul Coughlin. And he has nothing to do with international relations or foreign cultures or what have you. He runs a nonprofit group that consults to schools around the country on the problem of bullying. And I went back and referenced on our blog page at myfaithradio.com. Early this morning, I looked this up. Last time Paul Coughlin was here on our program, he was talking about the problem of bullying among school children. And he said, and here's a few quotes from Paul Coughlin. He says, sometimes Christians don't know what to do with the virtue of courage. He says, in the Beatitudes, Jesus says that blessed are the peacemakers. But if you look closely at Jesus' words, he's not talking about pacifism. Jesus is talking about people who work aggressively to resolve conflict, and that's what we need with bullying. We need kids in these situations to step up and fight for justice, and to do it with love and to do it with truth, but to also do it with strength and backbone. And then he goes on to say, the Christian community really needs to reevaluate its views on the use of redemptive force. Bullies don't listen to peace, love, and understanding. They listen to power, end quote. Now, if we can accept that as being scripturally sound and true when it comes to bullies on the playground or in the classroom, could we not view the rest of the world of that in the face of a trend of beheadings throughout the world? Is there such a thing as redemptive force? And do bullies who want to behead others, do they understand peace, love, and understanding? Think about that. It's a complex world we're in, and we're talking about it. This is the Faith Radio Network. It's now 7:56. I'm Austin Hill. On the Faith Radio Network, as we celebrate Pastor Appreciation Month. You realize today begins the month of October. Welcome to October, by the way. Yeah, fourth quarter of 2014. Where did the year go? I know that's the question that's top of mind for so many of us. Get over to myfaithradio.com and nominate your pastor to receive a very nice gift, a week-long getaway to Sunscape Retreats. That's one of the ways in which we want to bring honor and dignity and show our respects for the work that the church pastor does, so many of them all across the country. MyFaithRadio.com is the place to get to. Speaking of pastors, Pastor Greg Laurie, my interview guest on the program coming up tomorrow morning. Pastor Greg delivering the message at the upcoming Harvest America evangelistic effort. That's an event scheduled for this weekend, this Sunday, and it's going to be huge. And dare I say, it's going to be historic. Pastor Greg Laurie joins me to talk about that as well. So does Kim Cotola from the Cradle My Heart program, heard Sunday evenings on Faith Radio. She'll be with me tomorrow morning. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow on the Faith Radio Network. Thanks for listening to this podcast from Austin Hill in the Morning. For more information about this, you can visit Austin Hill in the Morning, our program page, on MyFaithRadio.com. That's MyFaithRadio.com.